guys. Welcome to another episode of Indie Darlings, the podcast where we discuss films that we consider to be indie darlings. Now, this can make the film can be an indie darling for good or bad reasons. It's just a film that we feel stands out. And today's film is The House of the Devil, a 2009 horror film. And the chooser of this film and today's special guest is the lovely comedian, Drew Droege.
Hi, Connie.
Thank you so much for coming today.
Thanks for having me. Thanks for calling me lovely. Back at you.
Okay, so I asked you to choose a horror indie film, and there are a lot of those.
Yes.
You chose this pretty quickly.
Yeah.
Why is that?
It's the first thing that comes to my mind when you say horror indie. Even though, I mean, I love horror movies. I love indie films, and I have seen a bunch of them. I heard about this movie. I think I read a review of it in the LA Weekly when it came out, and it was at the Sunset 5 in LA, whatever that theater's called now, the Limley or whatever. And it was like in theaters for a week, and I got this great review in the LA Weekly, and they said it's a total throwback, and I was like killing time, and I was blown away. And I show it to so many people. It's one of those movies that, like, you know, a group of friends get together and go to Palm Springs, over New Year's, and we just grab a bunch of movies. And that was one that I'm like, I can't wait to show you guys The House of the Devil. Because I grew up watching so many 70s and 80s slasher movies, and like Don't Go in the Woods, and, you know, like What's Behind the Door, and Don't Answer the Phone, and or all those kind of movies, or like mainly like When a Stranger Calls, this movie definitely evokes that movie. So I love those movies, and I've seen so many movies since then try to emulate that style or try to comment on it and wink really hard at, like, it's so 80s, totally tubular, dude. And they're making fun of the genre in a way, like, get it. And House of the Devil felt like this was a movie that I somehow accidentally skipped over at the video store in the 80s, and I had just never checked it out. The title sequence alone is so awesome and so hooked me. And, you know, we were talking earlier about, like, I'm not always just style alone isn't what always gets me, but the style is so perfectly, created in this movie. Also, you have the lead performance of Jocelyn Donahue, who I don't know who she is. I've never seen her in anything else, but oh my God, she is fantastic. I mean, and it's like they found this performance, and it's so hard to do that. It's so hard to recreate something without really winking at it.
Yeah.
And so I love it.
Yeah. I did not know that much about this movie. I never heard of it until you mentioned it, but I was just super excited. The House of the Devil is directed by Ty West, starring Jocelyn Donahue and indie darling Greta Gerwig.
Yes. It was the first thing I ever saw her in. Yes. I got to be honest. Greta Gerwig's performance is the only thing that makes me crazy in this movie, because
really?
She's in a totally different movie from anybody else. She's so incredibly modern. She's so mannered. The way she eats pizza drives me nuts. I'm just going to say it. She's, you know what? She's doing just fine. She doesn't need my approval. And she's done other great things, but this movie, she's so mannered, and she's doing so much business, and she's eating pizza and slurping Coke and talking and doing things. And she's just acting with a capital acting.
Do you think they let her improvise in this?
I'm sure they did. And I know they were all friends. And also Lena Dunham is in this movie as well. She's the voice of a 911 operator.
Yeah, my friend, I saw this with a friend, and he screamed that during the credits. Like, Lena Dunham was the voice.
Yeah, she's the voice. She's a voiceover. And they're all friends. And Lena Dunham is also in his follow-up movie, The Innkeepers.
Yes,
exactly. Yes, with Pat Healy, who's a genius as well. But anyway, so I do think he let her improvise a lot, and I think they found it really charming on the set that she's doing really stupid shit against Jocelyn Donahue, who's playing it so straight.
Yeah.
And I get it. I mean, all of us are improv comedy clown nerds, and we get in a movie and we're like, this is my time to play around and show off my, and it's just, I'm like, this is a cautionary tale. Like, know what movie you're in. And I will be guilty. I am so terrible at so many things that I don't know what movie I'm in. So sometimes you literally are like, you're just told like, hey, go crazy and do a silly movie. But,
I don't know if I thought she was bad in it. I definitely feel like she got the note, Greta, bring the comedy. You're the only comedic person in this film. just so you know.
Right, right. And I feel like there was stuff that it was like, well, I mean, there's just weird stuff. Like when she goes to the, and we can, I guess, go through the whole movie in a minute.
Oh, but, sure.
Yeah, but she goes, when she goes to the house and she grabs candy that's in a dish and she's eating candy out of the dish and then puts it back. And it just feels too like Lucille Ball to me for the rest of the movie, which has so straight up like, yeah. And it, you have incredible cameos by Dee Wallace and Mary Warrenoff and Tom Noonan, which is such a nod to horror movie nerds. It's like, oh, how cool that they're all in this movie.
Dee Wallace, she was the mom in E.T.
Yes, yes. And also the mom in Cujo.
What?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, she's just in the very beginning of this movie, but yeah. it's such a great, it sets the tone. It's like you're watching a movie that's, you know, that and nothing she's doing is like winking or campy at all. It's just like, she's the straight up real estate agent.
I think what stands out for me from this movie, it feels like it doesn't feel like it's trying to, like you said, like make a nod to 70s, 80s films. Right. It feels like it's legitimately trying to just do that.
Yeah, exactly.
What's so funny to me is because, okay, so they use the camera angles that you don't see anymore. Lots of zoom ins.
Yes. That opening shot of just that's just slowly zooming in on her standing in the house is so terrifying. And you have no idea what's happening.
And then the credits over moving images, which is so jarring now. It's funny. But from the clothing. But something I noticed, whenever you see a movie now trying to emulate 70s style and you see girls all Farrah Fawcetted out.
Yes.
It never quite looks like it because it's something impossible. Everyone's hair looks way too juicy.
Yes. Yes.
I don't know what it is, but it's like people did not know how to lock in moisture until the 80s.
Yeah.
And it's just,
you're right. No, it does definitely look like a drag knockoff of what they, because what people fail to realize, it's like in the 70s, they weren't commenting on having that hair. They had that hair. That was a popular style.
Mm-hmm.
But yes, they had shampoo with beer in it. And that was the most, you know, like new age avant-garde thing that they had in the 70s for.
Like, if you look at, like, the leads in a lot of 70s movies, like Carrie or even 007, everyone's hair looks so incredibly dry.
Yes.
But if you see people do it now, like, even though, like, they have the Farrah Fawcett cut, I'm like, your hair's still way too healthy conditioned.
Yeah. Yes.
And it's so weird that you guys have that architecture. I could tell you have those Pepsi cans.
Yep. Yep.
But you can't nail the hair. I think that's so funny.
Right. I was cheating a little bit to refresh my, I actually just saw this movie like 2 weeks ago, but I was like, I went on IMDb and I was looking and there are all these goofs. Like, people love to find all the goofs and things that are wrong in this movie.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, come on, it's an indie film. And some of them I'm like, I love it just because it means you've watched the movie a million times over and over again. But there was a comment about her hair, about how her hair changes. And I didn't notice that. I thought her hair was great.
Did they say how it changed?
They just said it got curlier when she got in the house or something. I don't know. But hey, that's the devil. It's the house of the devil.
It's moisture.
I'll take it.
Okay, so let's just go through this. This movie, The House of the Devil, is about a college student. And she is struggling to find a place to live. She has the dorm roommate from hell. Like, she's always having sex with her boyfriend. She snores really loud. And so she finds a new place to live. And it's $300 because it's the 70s. And so she's unemployed. And then she sees this ad for a babysitter. And she was supposed to meet the guy, the dad that she calls, but he never shows up. And so she's, like, skeeved out by it. But then Greta Gerwig is like, oh, you should rip down all the flyers so you're the only one that calls. And then sure enough, the babysitter dad calls her back and they're nervous. Greta Gerwig is very nervous about her going to see this stranger. And they drive like out into the middle of the woods.
Mm-hmm.
And they take the babysitting job because the guy offers her she bargains a bit, but like $400 to babysit for one night. Mm-hmm. But it also turns out it's not a baby. They're babysitting the mother of his wife.
Yes.
Yeah. Also, when he answers the door, you find out he's a giant.
Yes, Tom Noonan. He's huge.
He's like 7 feet tall.
Uh-huh.
Is he really that tall?
I think he really is like 6'7" or 6'8".
Okay.
He's in that movie, Synecdoche, New York. You see how huge he is in that movie. He's in Manhunter. He's basically like the Buffalo Bill character in Manhunter. He's the serial killer in that movie.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. He's awesome.
It's so crazy because he has the most gentle voice.
Yes.
It's very jarring. I thought it was really comical, like the way they shot his introduction, because you see the girls, there's a lot of shots of people and you don't see their faces, which mm-hmm. I thought was very interesting. Mm-hmm. Okay. So you see the girls opening the door and you just see a torso.
Yes.
And I'm like, what's going on? And my friend's like, oh my God, he's a fucking giant. And so it's just, the movie got pretty crazy.
Yeah. It really takes its time though, because it goes for quite a while. And that's also such a great trademark of films of that time.
Yes.
They took their time. They weren't rushing into immediately throwing you with this gore and horror.
Mm-hmm.
And then you really don't know. I mean, nothing they're really doing is a huge red flag. I mean, I really put myself in Jocelyn Donahue's position, because it's like, you need this money. Why not? All you have to do is just sit downstairs. You don't even have to go up and take care of this woman.
Mm-hmm.
Just sit downstairs while we go out mm-hmm. on an errand is what they basically tell her. You meet the wife, played by Mary Warrenoff,
Is she also like a giant?
She's probably really tall, I would imagine.
Because they try to make it seem like the woman was also a giant.
Yeah. She was, I mean, I would imagine, I don't think Mary Warrenoff is a short woman at all. I'm not sure. Mm-hmm. But she's in Rock and Roll High School and all those Paul Bartel movies, and I love her.
Oh, but the thing that they keep hinting at in the movie is that their town is the best. They're mm-hmm. going to have a lunar eclipse that night.
Yes.
And their town is the best place on Earth to get a look at it.
Yes.
And the creepy couple that is asking them to babysit is they're going out to go see the eclipse.
Mm-hmm.
And they're leaving the mother behind. And then, okay, so Greta Gerwig is upset that she's going to stay.
Yes.
And she leaves.
Well, because I think originally the plan was she was going to go with, they were going to stay together.
Mm-hmm.
And then Tom Noonan tells Jocelyn Donahue, it's only you. You mm-hmm. have to be by yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And makes it very clear, like, I can't pay two babysitters. I'm freaked out.
Mm-hmm.
And makes this and does get a little creepy. And it's that moment of like, what's the deal here?
Mm-hmm.
But then you feel like Jocelyn Donahue feels guilt.
Yeah.
So she's like, I didn't say that I was going to bring somebody with me.
Yeah.
So she makes Greta leave. And then so Greta like goes and like is going to go back to the dorm, hang out, wait for the phone call, and then come back to mm-hmm. pick her up.
Yeah. And then so she leaves, and then she stops to light a cigarette.
Yes.
And a random guy comes out of nowhere.
Yes.
And just shoots her in the, spoiler, shoots her in the face.
Greta, yeah.
Yeah, and it's so sudden. Like, it's literally mid-sentence. Like, I screamed.
Yeah. Well, he asks her if she's the babysitter.
Yes.
And she says, no, I'm. And before she answers, she gets shot.
Yeah. And she's sitting in a car and her brains just explode onto the dash.
Yep.
They show it later. It's just concave.
Yeah.
It's so crazy.
If her performance wasn't big enough, she's everywhere now.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm looking at my notes. It says, fucking shit, Greta got shot.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Let's see. Oh. Okay, so and now is when things start getting cooking.
Uh-huh.
Like creepy stuff starts happening with the woman alone. She's kind of a terrible babysitter.
Yeah, well, because she's running. She puts on. Is it?
She puts
one thing leads to another. Is that the song she puts on?
Oh, I didn't even recognize the song.
Or Talking in Your Sleep. It's something like that. It's some popular 80s song.
But she's wearing a Walkman.
A Walkman, and she's dancing around.
But she literally runs through this house she's never been through before, dancing while. Uh-huh. A Breakfast Club style,
uh-huh.
listening to music, and she knocks over a vase.
Uh-huh.
But didn't they also say, don't go upstairs?
No, they didn't tell her. They just said, you probably won't have to. Like, you'll never hear, you know, all they say is, here's some money for pizza.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can order a pizza.
Yeah.
And just hang out.
Yeah.
So she dances around, knocks over the vase. Is that mm-hmm. before she orders the pizza?
I think she ordered a pizza before.
Okay.
And, oh, here's something I had trouble wrapping my head. We'll get to it. Okay. So, she's like, every time she hears a noise upstairs, like she knows there's the elderly woman's up there, but mm-hmm. she's still creeped out.
Yes.
And so she keeps hearing noises. And then, she looks at the light coming from underneath the grandma's, door.
Mm-hmm.
And then the camera pans to the other side and you see a bunch of dead bodies.
Oh, it's the most terrifying thing. I talk about when I screamed when I saw it in the theater. It was so terrifying to me.
Yeah, it was so crazy.
Well, because you don't see anything leading up to that. And then yeah. when that happens, the camera just slides under the door.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, while she's been dancing around,
mm-hmm.
ordering pizza, they're just dead bodies on a floor, all mm-hmm. and arranged in a pentagram
mm-hmm. yeah,
position.
Like, yeah, like three mangled bodies. Mm-hmm. And it's just so crazy. And she starts getting creeped out because she starts seeing little things here and there that prove that the couple that left is lying. Because the wife said, first the husband says, I'm going upstairs to see my wife. But then the wife comes in the front door.
Mm-hmm.
And then mm-hmm. the wife, she's like, oh, I was just coming from the basement. That's where I store my furs. But
then you see the furs are downstairs.
The furs are downstairs. She's like, so why was she in the basement?
Uh-huh.
And then the pizza arrives. She's in full freak out mode by this point.
Yeah.
And you see that the pizza delivery guy was.
But she still doesn't know the dead bodies are there. She's just kind of creeped out. She also broke a vase.
Yeah.
She's feeling kind of weird. Oh, she's also calling Greta.
Yeah, and Greta's.
And Greta's not answering.
Yeah, she has an annoying voicemail that keeps tricking her.
Yes.
And, okay, so she. The pizza gets delivered by the guy that shot Greta in the face. Mm-hmm. So I was wondering, I was like, okay, so she ordered pizza. Did he kill the pizza guy or was he the pizza guy?
Mm-hmm. Oh, is that your question for me?
Yeah.
I think, well, because the pizza's poisoned. The pizza's got poison in it.
Yeah, yeah,
right? Because that's why she gets all like, well, you know, loopy.
Yeah, yeah.
So I think they gave her a fake number to call.
Uh-huh.
And then she just called that number and they probably just gave her the son. Cause he's the son of Tom mm-hmm. Noonan and Mary Warrenoff.
Uh-huh.
So that the guy that shot Greta. So they gave her his number.
Uh-huh.
And so he made a pizza with poison in it and dressed up like a pizza guy to bring it to them.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. That makes sense. That makes sense. Okay. So she eats like one and a half slices and then, she starts to get, I forget. Something's happening.
Well, it tastes bad. She's like, it tastes all, or you can tell that the way they also shoot it, it looks so gross.
It looks like it's been sitting for hours.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And so she was just sort of like, ugh, this isn't good. So she throws it away.
Yeah, like she wipes her tongue and everything.
Uh-huh.
Like she gargles.
Yeah, yeah,
and
yeah.
And then I forget, something scary is happening though as she's starting to black out. Do you remember what that was?
Well, the power goes out, like that she has to, a light bulb goes out. Because there's thunder and lightning or something. What happens then? Because she has to go up into the attic.
Yeah.
The other thing what I love about the movie is that it's very quiet and linear. And then once the drugs start to take in and once the eclipse starts to happen, it gets super chaotic.
Mm-hmm.
And you kind of can't make, you know, and they also really use, you know, they make the most of like small budget where you just only see what you need to see. But you're really disoriented because you realize that she's in this house. And is that when they come back?
I think so, because I feel like someone was chasing her as she was starting to black out.
Yes.
Okay. I'm trying to remember. Was it the dad or was it the pizza guy?
I know,
guy?
And I just saw the movie.
I
and
saw
I don't
it
remember.
Last night. And
oh, my
I'm,
God.
I was stone cold sober, too. Let's see. Spiked pizza. Okay, well, she blacks out.
Mm-hmm.
Wakes up. The movie is in full mode now. She is gagged
mm-hmm.
and lying tied up. Lying in a pentagram,
mm-hmm.
You find out the old grandma is like this deformed looking monster woman.
Disgusting.
Like full monster. And the parents are back along with the pizza guy and
a chalice of blood.
Yes. Yes. The grandma does this weird ceremony where she draws a pentagram on the girl's abdomen
mm-hmm.
and then she. Oh, this part is so gross. She has a goat skull.
Uh-huh.
But you don't know what's in it. And Also, during this scene, the music is terrifying.
Yes, yes.
Yeah, my friend begged me to turn it down because it was so crazy.
Right, right. Well, you don't expect what's actually happening. And then, yeah.
Yeah, like when, so when, okay, so she tips the skull over this girl's face and then blood just starts pouring out.
Yes, yes.
And it's horrifying.
Yes.
And, but somehow she manages to break loose and like punch her way out of there, and which is impressive.
And she gouges Tundinen's eye, right?
Yes. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. She scratches the old lady's face, and the pizza delivery guy has a gun, which she manages to steal from him. I think she stabs the mom.
Yeah. She goes up. She gets. She runs upstairs, and she's in the attic. And then the mom has that terrifying prayer to Satan when she rips her wig off.
Yeah. Oh yeah. She rips her wig off because there's a scary scene where she's in the bathroom. Earlier, before all this happens, and she pulls back the shower curtain and sees a bunch of just mangled black hair.
Yeah.
And it's awful to look at. So was that the mom's hair or did she? Yeah.
Well, you can see if you go, because I've seen that movie a bunch of times, you can tell in the earlier in the movie when Mary Warrenoff comes down, she clearly has a wig on. Her wig is like behind, because at first it looks like, oh my God, they didn't, that actress, you can see her hair, that black wig is, but that's a wig that she has over her like. But she's almost balding, like blonde and balding.
Yeah, you know? And like, yeah, she has less hair than her husband. And but what was all that black hair then?
I think, I mean, I don't know if she was like cutting the wig.
Trimming
the wig. I also just love because there are things that are just so, the images are so visceral. And you're just sort of like, it's like I felt like I was her in the house going, what is this? And you're not going to get an explanation.
Yeah.
I also really like, I mean, to me, like what's also great about an old horror movie like this is that they don't explain everything to you. She finds that old, the photo of the family.
Oh,
and
you're that's
like,
right.
Oh, that's, those are the bodies that are on the floor. But you never find out who those people are.
I just put that together.
Oh, well, yeah. Because it's like they don't tell you all these things and you have to watch it a couple of times to go, oh, that's what that is. But to me, what I always argue about, what's great about horror movies from the 70s, it's like Jaws. It's there's a shark in the water, swim. Alien, there's an alien on the ship, run. It's not like Prometheus, which is infuriating to me, which is going to be like an hour and a half of explanation of history and science and theology and all this stuff. You're like, this isn't real. I'm so bored. If it's, I want to just, and it's so much scarier to me when you don't know what's actually happening in the situation. Yeah. And yet you feel like the filmmakers confidently do know. But it's just one of those things you're like, this is it. Like, and if you're really in that situation, you're not going to stumble upon an old, you know, genius who's going to tell you the legend of this house. Like, you're not going to get that in a movie like this. You're just going to be like drugged and fighting for your life. And a devil woman is going to be painting pentagrams on your stomach, you know?
Yeah, I can't believe I forgot that.
That's how it is.
When she's digging through the closet and she sees all those fur coats, she finds a box filled with photos of families, and they're in a car. They're in front of a car that is still there.
Yes.
That's what's so creepy about
it.
Yes,
yes.
So I guess the family that used to live there got killed by them?
Yeah, possibly.
Crazy. Okay.
Well, then maybe, and I'm thinking this through, that maybe that they were posing as that family all along. And that's why that woman was, that's why Mary Warnoff was wearing a wig. She was trying to pose as that other woman that they killed.
Yeah, because there were only three people in that family.
Right, right.
Interesting.
And then she gets out of the house.
Yeah, she gets out of the house. And the thing is, though, part of that ritual, whatever that they're doing, is already starting to kick in. So she's starting to get these terrifying, like, flashes of demons and stuff. Yes. The house is next to a graveyard. And so the husband is, I think he's the only one left now. He's chasing her and he's like, you were chosen, the prophecy. And she's like, so she takes the gun and shoots herself in the head.
Yeah.
But the movie doesn't end there.
No.
So dark. The next scene is in a hospital and you see her head all bandaged up. She's still beautiful, but then you see a nurse taking care of her and it's still very tense because like any moment you think like she's going to like, ah!
Right. Exactly.
But no, that doesn't happen. She's just changing her IV and the nurse goes, don't worry, you're going to be okay. And then she taps her stomach and goes, both of you.
Yeah.
Yeah. So now she's pregnant with a demon baby.
So now she's the house of the devil.
Yes. Yeah. Her uterus is the house of the devil now.
Yes.
Oh, my God.
It's, I mean, I find it so satisfying. It's so, you know, it's everything I would want in a horror movie. Mm-hmm. It's also like, I'm not, for me, like supernatural stuff doesn't really freak me out that much. And the reason this does, it's all about people. You're like, these are crazy people who I believe would do these things. Mm-hmm. You know, obviously like the spirit of the devil going in you is the supernatural element. But to me, the really terrifying thing is that like, these are just really scary people. And also like, for me, like growing up in the small town in the South, we were taught to be terrified of devil worshipers. And mm-hmm. I think a lot of devil worship is just hilarious. Like, mm-hmm. I find it really funny. And I think it's just like, and I also think most people who are, you know, it's like, you know, in defense of like the West Memphis Three, like they're just nerds who like, you know, who like, you know, who like rock music, and they're really not bad people.
Yeah.
But so in a lot of movie, but in something like this, I was like, oh yeah, this is totally believable. Like, to me, there's nothing scarier than like being trapped out in the middle of nowhere. Mm-hmm. Like horror movies set in a city don't freak me out as much as in the woods.
There's not that many set in cities now that I think about it.
When Jason went to Manhattan, we were like, we're done.
I mean, that's pretty amazing.
Right.
but this has a lot of those elements like isolation.
Yes.
Being in a new environment. Victorian house.
Yeah.
People with very distinguishing features.
It's kind of Texas Chainsaw Massacre in a lot of ways too.
Mm-hmm.
Where things aren't explained, where you're just thrown into this situation and you're just like, here's how it is, you know?
Uh-huh. And devil worship, prophecy,
mm-hmm.
A young teenage girl, and I mean, I enjoy this film. It felt very like a very accurate depiction of a 70s film,
mm-hmm.
with a very slow burn.
Mm-hmm.
Even the acting to a certain degree, I feel like the cadence of which people were speaking.
For sure.
Felt kind
That's of really why Greta Gerwig's performance stood out to me, because I felt like, and this is before I had seen her, and this is before her like sort of indie darling status,
mm-hmm.
you know, was established. But I was watching it going, you are so 2009.
Mm-hmm.
You're so like, I'm like kind of that mumblecore starting and stopping sentences and that sort of that cadence that just didn't exist in 70s movies. Mm-hmm. Everyone had their lines, and they even in the movies that are terrible, you can tell they were very scripted. They were very deliberate,
mm-hmm.
you know, even in, you know, my favorite filmmaker is John Waters. And it's like, even in old John Waters movies, every line is deliberate in those movies. It's like you, even if it feels improvised, they're like, nope, John wrote every word that we said in those movies. So that was just a different style then. It wasn't just like, hey, you guys just get in front of the camera and we kind of need to get these points across.
I think what stood out for her performance with me is because like she definitely had that thing that Brad Pitt does where when they're acting, in their performance, food is definitely a part of it.
Uh-huh.
So her thing is like, I'm going to make a lot of noise when I eat. It's going to be part of my character.
Ugh,
but here's the thing. In terms of 70s and early 80s actors, that wasn't really a thing yet.
Mm-mm.
So I think for me, that's what made it seem a little too modern.
Yeah. I mean, it's like she really, I could tell she was supposed to be like the PJ Souls of the movie,
mm-hmm.
you know, from like Carrie and also from Rock and Roll High School.
Mm-hmm.
And PJ Souls always wore like baseball hats and had chewing gum. And she was always like a brat. And she had a couple moments where she would kind of like almost look right into the camera and go, get it. And that's hard to redo without looking like the movie's doing that. But yes, there was that. No one eats pizza and drinks Coke like that. Like, that's just insane. And it's also like, as there's a style, and I've noticed that I recently did something and I worked with that, you know, I did a reading and there was this actor who was trying really hard to be, you know, natural. And it drove me crazy. I was like, no one really talks like that. You're these pauses and these things. And I'm like, this isn't, I know what you're trying to do, but you're doing such a style.
Mm-hmm.
Like it made me want to do everything like this next to him, because I was like, you're what I would be. That's just as, you know, artificial
yeah.
as what you're doing when you're just trying to do that thing, you know, that acting thing. How people talk.
Yeah.
And it's like, it drives me crazy.
It definitely did feel like 80s sitcom-y.
Uh-huh.
Well, also, for those of you that haven't seen this movie, she eats pizza in a way that it's so messy that she has to suck every one of her fingers. And then afterwards, she says, "This pizza isn't very good."
And I'm like, I know. It's so strange. No one, I've never seen anybody eat pizza like that.
I think what we're seeing in is an accumulation of probably 12 different takes.
Yes.
And they're like,
and I know it's setting up the pizza eating later,
mm-hmm.
but it's almost like, Greta, watch the dailies of how Jocelyn's eating pizza.
Mm-hmm.
Or just go to a pizza place and watch a person eat pizza.
Because,
mm-hmm. And also, there's no comedy, and I don't know anyone that's eaten pizza hilariously.
Yeah.
Maybe look for it somewhere else.
I
don't need it. I also don't need comedy in a movie like
well,
this.
Well, I did notice.
I'm thoroughly entertained.
The first time I saw this was in the movie Grease, where there's a thing where if there's a female character that eats a lot, that's inherently funny.
Oh, right. Exactly.
But I just, the act itself is usually not what makes it funny.
Right.
Like, there's not a part in Grease where the girl's like, "I love this Twinkie," and just like,
right,
sucks
exactly.
It
no, Jan just eats the Twinkie
yeah.
and, you know, is in love with the toothbrush cartoon or whatever. That was her character.
Bash. Yeah, I think that what we were seeing was Greta's version of brush. Oh, God. How great was watching the news from the 80s?
Oh, my God. My memory of news in the 80s was Weekend Update on SNL, because that's how I learned that's how I got all my news.
Okay.
It was from Dennis Miller.
Okay.
I'm sad to admit now, given who Dennis Miller is. But yeah, that Dennis Miller was.
I don't remember watching the news as a kid, but did they say not much going on tonight?
No, they just would find things to talk about, I guess. You know? Also, we would wait till 6 o'clock to find out what happened, because it would either be in the paper that morning,
uh-huh.
or you would find out on the news. Like uh-huh. something happened at like 2:30 in the afternoon. You wouldn't find out until 6 o'clock.
That's so crazy.
You know, and so you may not know that like there was some horrible, you know,
mm-hmm.
bombing or we're at war or whatever.
Yeah.
Dan Rather was a huge part. I mean, and I'm proud to say that, because Dan Rather's just a badass. He's fucking brilliant.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I watched Dan Rather and then Peter Jennings and all that, you know.
I used to get all my news from The Daily Show.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. It's that thing where you're like, it's does such a, you know, an effect. Those, you know, comedy has such a great impact on that, because it's like, it's a way to just sort of Trojan horse the real news in there.
Oh, yeah. You find a way to find out what's going on, process it without feeling like you're watching the news.
Right.
Because if you watch the actual news, it's like torture.
Mm-hmm.
Like, even when I
well, now it's on 24 hours, and so you just, everything's breaking.
Mm-hmm.
Everything's just breaking, this and that, and it's just like the same thing over and over and over and over again.
What's creepy is you kind of don't really know when things are happening anymore, because things never really stop happening.
Right.
So sometimes I'll read a story like, "Oh my God," and then someone's like, "That was 2 years ago," and I'm like, "What?"
Right. I know.
That's creepy.
I know.
So this movie ends with credits right over her face in the mm-hmm. hospital,
mm-hmm.
which made me laugh a little.
Uh-huh.
But I also appreciated it because, I mean, stay within the genre.
Yeah.
And I enjoy this film. I appreciate a slow burn.
Mm-hmm.
I like the girl's what is her name? Jocelyn Donahue.
Yeah.
Any relation to Phil Donahue?
I don't know.
Probably should have Googled that.
I know.
Stylistically, the movie's gorgeous.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it really fits in with that whole 80s style, even though it's a 2009 film.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, Drew, if people liked this movie, what's another movie you would recommend they watch, or movies?
Oh, that's a great question. I would definitely say the original When a Stranger Calls with Carol Kane. If you haven't seen that, it's really terrifying. It's actually two movies, and the second half of that movie is not as great as the uh-huh. first half. The first half is what everybody thinks of, and people remember that movie because it's the babysitter where the call is coming from inside the house, where she's getting a phone call.
Okay.
But that is, it's so crazy how terrifying it is, and all your... It's just so simple,
mm-hmm.
you know? And then the second half is Carol Kane is older, and mm-hmm. it's like 10 years later, and she has kids. And then he comes back, he's escaped, and then Colleen Dewhurst plays like a madam. It's very strange. But stylistically, it's very similar to House of the Devil.
Mm-hmm.
What else? What do I like just totally love? I don't know. What did it remind you of anything?
Well, it made me think of the film, because a film that was made around that time that it's emulating is Carrie.
Oh, of course. Yeah,
I would say watch Carrie.
Carrie's a masterpiece.
It's very watchable.
Yes.
And just seeing how teenage girls acted versus how teenage girls act now, it's mm-hmm. so interesting to
mm-hmm.
watch.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what happened, but there was a period of time when kids cussed a lot in movies.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And then in the 90s, it kind of simmered down.
Uh-huh.
Do you remember that?
Well, now kids are so clever. Mm-hmm. Like all the dialogue is like, you know, everybody has, it's just so, you just tell the writers went to town and all that. And I mean, I feel like in these older movies, the kids talked more like kids do, mm-hmm. you know, even though, I mean, in Carrie, my God, Nancy Allen is amazing. And she gets some great zingers in there,
mm-hmm.
but it feels, there's something about it that, you know, they did, they all felt like they talked differently. They had different, you know, ways of interacting. And Sissy Spacek barely talks in the whole movie.
Oh, yeah.
She got an Oscar nomination, which she completely deserved. She, mm-hmm. she and Piper Laurie both were nominated, and they both are horrifying.
Piper Laurie plays her mother, correct? Mm-hmm. Apparently, she didn't know the movie was supposed to be a horror. She was told it was a comedy.
Wow. How crazy.
Yeah, because that, and if you know that and you see her performance, it's like, oh.
Wow.
Yeah.
I think she's horrifying in the movie. I think she's great. When she is, when she's doing, what's it called? A sewing machine. When she's sewing, mm-hmm. thank you. And she answers the phone mm-hmm. and she just goes, ish. It's the quietest, creepiest little whistle. She's like, ish. And you're like, oh, that woman.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. She is terrifying.
Margaret White.
Let's see. Carrie.
Definitely Texas Chainsaw Massacre. I mean, these are like the classic, the tent poles.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it has some Halloween in there. It feels like, you know, Carpenter's Halloween. I mean, it definitely calls back all the classics.
Mm-hmm.
There's a great 70s movie that is not, I mean, just when we're talking about good 70s horror movies. And one of my only things I like that Clint Eastwood ever made is a movie called Play Misty for Me. Starring Clint Eastwood and Jessica Walter, who we know from Arrested Development. And Jessica Walter, oh my God, she's amazing. If you haven't seen this movie, it's so good.
What's it called again?
Play Misty for Me. And Clint Eastwood plays a radio DJ.
Mm-hmm.
And he's, I mean, at his hottest. And it is like 70s Eastwood glory.
Yeah.
And this woman calls in and she always says, play Misty for Me, the song. She
wants I've to heard hear the of song, this. Misty. Yeah.
And she starts stalking him and has the thing where she actually thinks they have a relationship. She thinks because she.
There's an episode of Frasier, I think, that mimics this.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Yeah.
It's real. It's just psychologically terrifying. Mm-hmm. And Donna Dixon's in it and it's great.
Yeah, I definitely need to check that out.
Yeah, it's real good.
Okay. We're heading towards the end of our podcast. Is there anything, this is going to come out in October. Is there anything you would like to plug, promote?
Oh gosh, October. Hello, October. I have no idea. I really have no clue. I'm going to assume, since it's supposed to come out in July, that my one-man show will be available online by October. Let's hope. It's called Bright Colors and Bold Patterns, and it's available to watch on Broadway HD.
It's been getting a lot of good reviews.
Oh, yeah. Thanks. It's been a lot of fun. I did it on stage here, and then I did it in New York for a few months, and then we filmed it for Broadway HD. And then it's so weird to talk about this because it hasn't happened yet, but because, you know, we're months before October. But we had a premiere in LA at Outfest in July.
Ooh.
Hasn't happened yet, but it went great. And then, yeah. So it was, it's been a lot of fun to do and I love that it's still alive and kicking. And then let's hope that my podcast will be up and running again by October. It's called Minor Revelations. I have no idea where it will be because our home network folded. So I don't know, but look for that.
Mm-hmm.
Hopefully also the TV show Heathers that I'm on, the reboot of mm-hmm. the film,
mm-hmm.
will have found a home. Let's God, let's hope. We're right now, we're in the middle of figuring all that out.
Mm-hmm.
So everything's up in the air.
Yeah.
October might be really busy or really desolate for me. I don't know.
We shall see. But if you guys haven't seen Drew perform, I saw him. Well, I saw him at Groundlings, and then I saw him perform in the stage production of Die, Mommy, Die.
Oh, yeah. That's
he fun. Is amazing.
Thank you.
Well, it's just so interesting because the way you play women, it's not like, I'm playing a woman. It's you do this thing that kind of reminds me of Kids in the Hall where you just play them real. God,
thank you. That means the world. That's who I learned from.
Oh, really?
I mean, Scott Thompson. And all those guys, I mean, you know, they all that because I grew up around really strong, funny women. Mm-hmm. And you know, a lot of it is like you talk to any, you know, gay boy. They're like our favorite. You ask them. I always said this. If you ask a straight guy who are your favorite comedians, 9 times out of 10, he's going to mention a man.
Mm-hmm.
If you ask a gay guy who are your favorite comedians, they're going to mention women. It's mm-hmm. just that thing.
Yeah.
I love Carol Burnett. I love Madeline Kahn. I loved Goldie Hawn, like all these people growing up.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was just always what was funny to me. And I just grew up around a lot of really big, loud, funny women. So, but I never really saw men play women. I mean, I had seen Monty Python, which I thought was funny, but I was like, women aren't really like that. Those yeah. are men in falsetto voices.
Yeah.
And then I saw Kids in the Hall and I was like, that's how you do it. You don't. Mm-hmm. And a lot of it is like, don't stress about the gender. Play the character.
Yes.
You know, the gender's not the joke.
Yeah. Like they, you don't see them wearing weird pointy boobs or changing their voice too much.
Right. 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 Right.
And I'm like, yeah, they're just people doing stuff.
Right. 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 Right.
I think one of the most humanizing scenes I've ever seen of a man playing a woman was when they play the secretaries.
Yeah. And they're the Kathys.
The Kathys.
Oh my God, yes.
They first arrive at the office and you see them changing their walking shoes into their office uh-huh. shoes. And it's a little thing that's not even mentioned, but I'm just like, that alone is right. like, now that's someone that watches women. Like,
yeah, exactly.
Really watches
yeah, yeah,
them.
Yeah. 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 I love that.
Yeah. Being like, I'm just going to change into my work shoes now.
I love it when, you know, they're just little details that you can notice and go, oh my God, you totally have paid attention to this little thing.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you've seen Cola Scola's
I love
sketch
him.
Where he plays the Sunny Delight mom.
I love him. That's the first thing I saw by him.
Okay. It's the most brilliant thing ever. And if you, it's called Happy Orange. If you could, you know, for people listening, if you know, and it's brilliant tonally, the way he plays it, everything is so good. But, and I told him what made me laugh, maybe the most, just because it was so stupid,
mm-hmm.
was that woman has this tiny little necklace. It's this tiny little loop around a chain that's not wacky, not jokey at all.
Mm-hmm.
But I love that he went to the detail to give this woman this tiny little necklace. And I was like, that woman picked that out and was like, this is great. This is what I need to wear mm-hmm. in my orange juice commercial.
Mm-hmm.
And it just, again, I was like, you've thought of everything. Like you really gave her this thing that you don't need to. Like,
yeah.
Anyway, it's brilliant on top of that. But I love those little things.
I love seeing him on the Amy Sedaris show.
Oh my God, yes.
It's the strangest thing. Like he plays a woman, but not changing his voice.
Mm-mm.
And he has like this beehive hair.
Uh-huh.
And it's hilarious because he's young.
Right.
And yeah, I don't know. He's just like such a strange, wonderful performer.
Yes.
I hope to see him live someday.
Oh, he's amazing. I'll let you know when because he's here. He's here a bunch. Like he comes to LA a lot.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, he's pretty special.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Fantastic. We know a lot of fantastic people.
Isn't it nice? No, I mean, I know that's not, I don't mean to sound like to make that sound pat. I do feel really lucky. Like sometimes I look around and I go, that's so lucky that we, you know.
Yeah.
Living here or, you know, getting in New York, you just get to see so many great people.
Yeah.
Doing stuff.
Yeah. Cause like a lot
and
of
the internet's great for that too. Cause you mm-hmm. get to see people, not just who TV deems.
It's so
worthy.
Crazy. Yeah. Get to hang out with some of the funniest people in the country.
I know.
And it's kind of humbling.
It is. And then it spoils you for the rest of the world. Cause
oh,
then
no,
you go into other conversations or hear people just talking and you're like, oh my God, this is the worst conversation I've ever heard.
Hanging out with unfunny people after hanging out with comedians is just like.
Well, and I really, I just sound like I actually really enjoy hanging with the pain of it to me is hanging out with people who aren't funny, who think they're funny.
Yeah.
We're trying really hard
that'll
to be
do
funny.
It.
Cause I don't care. I mean, I'm like, I love, you know, learning from all kinds of people or hanging out with people, but like if they're just screaming laughing. about ranch dressing. Mm-hmm. I can't.
Ranch dressing.
That's what I'm thinking of. Maybe it's or thinking about food.
Whenever I go on a date and a guy finds out I'm a comedian, they're like,
"Oh, it's the worst."
Yeah, I'm like, don't try to show me how funny you are.
No. No, it's really rough. And I try to lead with that too when I go on dates and just being like, because if someone's naturally funny, I love it. Of course, I just, mm-hmm. I get anxious when I feel someone's putting something on or they're like, oh, I really have to perform for him. And I'm like, oh God, please don't.
Yeah.
Because I don't care. Like, yeah.
Yeah.
Like, you're a really funny person and we had this great conversation. I hope this is like fun, but it's about a movie. You know what I mean? And we weren't going jokey, yeah. Wacky, wah.
Yeah,
like,
yeah,
it's,
yeah.
That's exhausting.
You got to win the show, you know?
Yeah, no. It's like, that's not, yeah.
It's awful. And I wish people would just exist sometimes.
I know. There's a thing sometimes. I just say, be a person. Mm-hmm. Just be a person.
Mm-hmm.
You know? Anyway.
Well, thank you so much for coming
today. Thank you.
Today.
Thanks for having me. This was so much fun.
This was lovely.
Yeah.
If you liked what you heard, you can rate and review us on Apple Podcasts. If you have questions or you want to suggest a movie or a guest, email us at indiedarlingspodcast@gmail.com. We also have an Instagram and Twitter at indiedarlingspodcast. Thank you and good night.
This is Betsy Stover.
And I'm Amanda Allen.
And we do a podcast called
Why Mommy Drinks.
Each episode, we have a guest and we all share a story of a time that our kids drove us to drink.
Parenting isn't easy, but it sure can be funny.
Listen to us on Campfire Media.
Why Mommy Drinks.
Campfire.